This is an Equity Bates Media podcast.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing in context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Equity Mind.
I will say this about investing. Everything you do learn is cumulative. What I learned at 20 is useful.
Welcome to a special bonus edition of Equity Mates Investing Podcast. My name is Bryce, as always, and I'm joined by Ren. How are you going? My name hasn't changed.
My name hasn't changed either. I am excited, but obviously we're not recording on our usual day and we're lost. Now, look, the reason that we are jumping on the mic and bringing a special bonus edition is we want to share the latest edition of Comedian v. Economist, one of the other podcasts in the Equity Mates stable. Adam and Thomas are two brothers. Thomas is a former Reserve Bank economist, and Adam is a stand-up comedian. And together, they unpack the world of macroeconomics.
That's right, Ren. It is a fantastic podcast. We're dropping it in here to just, you know, remind the Equity Mates community of all the fantastic work that is going on across the Equity Mates network. We'd love you guys to go over and support the CVE boys as well. They'll cover everything that's going on in the world of macro at the moment, which is a lot.
I think that's enough from us, Bryce. Yep. Hope everyone enjoys the episode, and we'll be back in your feed with your regular scheduled programming tomorrow.
Have a listen to this.
Hello and welcome to Comedian versus Economist. We demystify the world of money and help you get a handle on the bigger picture. My name's Adam and we're joined as always by my little older brother and real life economist, Thomas. Hi, Thomas.
Yeah, good day, Adam. How are you going?
Going very well, thank you. Thomas, before we start the show, I've just got a small favour to ask. We're coming to the end of the financial year and just taking a bit of stock of where we're at. Through our stats, we know we've got one of the highest listen-through rates in the industry. But now we're on a drive to grow our listener numbers. If everyone who listens to this show tells one person, just one person, that's all you got to do, that would be incredible and would help us out so much. So if you know one person who's intelligent, curious about the world with a good sense of humor, then please tell them about us or tag them in one of our socials posts. That would help us out incredibly. But Thomas, as always, big show coming up. Let's get into it. And Thomas, this is a call to action. As one, we need to rise up and fight the power. Fight the power prices, that is, because they're out of control. We're going to find out why a little bit later on. Interest rates just keep going up and up and up and down, apparently. ANZ has cut its interest rate. We're going to find out why they've done that. And in case you didn't understand NFTs already, well, strap yourself in because we've got some hardcore NFT nonsense coming up a little bit later in the show. But first, Thomas, it's time to check in on the ASX share market game. I think the final check-in for the game. And Thomas, is volatility just a nicer way of saying we're all really losing money? What's happening with the ASX game for you?
It hasn't. I'm not bathed in glory from my numbers. I'm in the top 7,000 now. Just
top 7,000.
Yeah,
how does that sit with you?
Yeah, a bit disappointed.
I'm a bit disappointed in you, to be honest.
Yeah, you know the funny thing is that I was like, okay, I'm so far out of the game. I'm gonna sell up all of the dogs that haven't done anything.
And haven't barked?
Haven't barked, yeah. And I'm going to sink it into a bear ETF. So I'm shorting the entire market effectively. So, like, I'm praying for a crash because the market's been on a downtrend. Everyone's talking about how the market's struggling. And the market went up.
So. Ain't that just like the markets? I'm sitting at 4,000 and my overall rank is 4,748. So if you told me that with a couple of weeks to go I'd be sitting at 4,748, I would have taken it.
We got some mover and shakers data. We got Genghis Khan is sitting on 64,000.
Right.
His number that I'm presuming.
That's pretty good. Start at 50K,
yeah,
40K, to be sitting at $64,000. That's well played in a bear market.
Yeah,
oh, it's not a bear market yet, is it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what's interesting about the numbers is like we got into the leaderboard got into the 60,000s pretty early on. I reckon about 3 months ago, and then really hasn't gone all that much further since then. All the leaders that we've checked in on, high exposure to commodities and to mining players, they had a really good run and then that has started to come off. So you're not getting big pops out of your miners like you were in the first half of the game.
Right.
Market's been tracking, on the slide. So basically the peloton, the top group, they've been just able to hold on to those gains, and that's how you've stayed ahead through this second half of the game. It's kind of interesting how it works. The thing that really jumps out for me is that 24% of participants are in profit. So over three quarters of the game's participants are running a loss, which I think goes to show how short-term stock picking is just hard. It's a tricky business.
Yeah, probably fits about with my portfolio as well. I reckon 25% of them are in profit. 75% of the companies are running a loss. It's tough times. It's, if we ran this game 12 months ago, everyone would be, feeling like a genius, myself included. It'd be a very, very different result.
I was happy. One of my trades did that well today. I bought AGL. I bought the dip today. So I don't know if you saw AGL.
Did it dip today? Because I heard over the weekend that the AGL board have shelved plans for the demerger. So Mike Cannon, Brooks and co, we talked about that on our show before. So that's not going ahead now?
No, that's off the cards. As we flagged, it was a very high hurdle to clear. They needed 75% of shareholders to agree to the demerger. Mike Cannon-Brookes controlled 13%, so he only needed to bring another 12% over to his side of the ledger to kill that deal. And over the last couple of weeks, we've seen some big holders come out and say they're not in favour of the demerger. So I think AGL saw the numbers were on the board and just went, okay, this isn't going to fly. We're just going to
save ourselves the indignity of a vote.
That said, the chairman and the CEO, Peter Botten and Graham Hunt, they've both stepped down now. So they're saying, okay, well, we lost this battle, so we're out. The shareholders want to go in a different direction, so need someone else at the helm. So big changes for AGL.
And so their share price dipped today, did it? Is that why you bought in?
Down 2%, but it dropped. It dropped 4% initially. That's about when I got in. So I reckon it's sort of, I think once people sort of get on board with Mike Cannon-Brookes' vision, I think it could lift.
I think top 7,000 is well within reach for you now. these kinds of slick trades that you.
knowing my record, I should probably just cash out now while I'm ahead, while I'm up $15.
Yeah, definitely. All right. So AGL was one of the stories then. Anything else going on? Any sort of trends within the ASX, within the markets?
I got into City Chic as that was my reopening play. I was looking for a reopening play and I just took a punt on City Chic without knowing all that much about the company. Hasn't done well. But the reason for that is that the CBD reopening has, a lot of the City Chic's offices are in the CBD. That reopening has taken a lot longer to play about than people were expecting.
Is it going to happen? The reopening that people talk about, because it may just be the new normal, as they say.
I don't know. Like, yeah, the property council's got data saying that Melbourne CBD occupancy is 36%.
Wow.
So it's just 36%. It's down to 19% on Monday, gets up to 40% and Friday. So, yeah.
I love Fridays in the office. I like going to work on a Friday. A lot of people don't, but I quite enjoy it.
Yeah. Four-fifths of people don't, apparently.
I like it because it's quiet.
So CBDs haven't bounced back. They're still, like, all the capitals, Melbourne's the worst, but all the capitals are about 50% or lower.
I think people have got reopening fatigue as well.
Yeah.
We've had a few cracks at reopening now. There's at least twice that I remember where people have said, right, we're good, let's start going back to the city. We're going to go 1 day a week, 2 days a week. And we kind of just started getting some momentum, and then a new COVID wave had hit, and we were back to sort of, right, everyone stay home for a bit. And so I reckon people are just like, I don't know, you say reopening, I'm just kind of over it. I might just stay home.
Yeah, I don't think it's really up to them though, is it?
beg to differ.
Really?
I think it is.
You telling your boss that, I'm not coming in. I think you said we're all back in the office, you'd be like,
But it's usually phrased as, I can't make it in today. Okay, Thomas, I'm hearing the price of electricity is going to spike if it hasn't already. What's going on with electricity?
The price is going up. That's the basic story. So the news, the data point is the Australian Energy Regulator came out and approved price increases of up to 18% in New South Wales and up to 12% in Queensland. So the Energy Regulator sits on the energy market and tries to stop energy companies gouging consumers and so does that by setting the ranges for the increases that they're offering.
So hang on, what did it set? A limit of 12%?
Up to 12% in Queensland, up to 18% in New South Wales.
And it's to stop gouging consumers. Just to okay, thanks. Thanks, regulator.
the regulator's got to pass on the wholesale prices. So the regulator sits on top of the retail, but the wholesale prices are going up. So if retail isn't allowed to increase their prices, they go out of business because wholesale prices are going up.
Right.
And we've had three retailers go bankrupt in the past 3 weeks, something like that. So they're already going to the wall. Yeah, not dealing with it. But you look at the wholesale electricity prices, the numbers are kind of ridiculous. So back in September last year, we're trading at under $50 per megawatt hour. That's how you quote electricity prices, per megawatt hour. So it was under $50 back in September last year. By January, it was just under $80. By March, we got up to $100. And then right now, it's running about $300.
Right.
So we've gone from under 50 to about 300 in less than 6 months. So it's really through the roof. And some of that's temporary, like... Some of it's obviously, a lot of it's around the war in Ukraine and the way that that's disrupted energy markets. I talked to my mate Tim, who's an energy market economist, and he said a bunch of coal fire power plants are just blowing up at the moment in big sort of fiery explosions. Not literally what he was saying, but something like along those lines.
I was going to say, I would have thought that would have made the news. Another coal fired power station has exploded today.
So I think three reactors at different plants are out of action at the moment because these assets are getting really old. I mean, this is sort of the AGL story. These power stations are getting very old now, getting towards the end of their life, which means they're becoming more unreliable. So three reactors are out of action. So Australia's electricity capacity is down by about 20% at the moment. So you got these sort of factors feeding into the current spike in prices. But even if you look at the what the forward market's saying, we're getting back down in about a year or so to $100, $120. That's a lot better than $300, but it's still three to four times what it was 6 months ago. So we're locking in effectively a tripling of electricity prices in the wholesale market, which then feeds through into retail prices.
I mean, it could be like we're trying to get people to go back to the city. This could be the master stroke. Like if we jack prices up through winter, people go in and use the office power instead of, you know, run the heater in the office. I don't know. Like Anna and I are both working at home at the moment. We run the heater all day and the bills are going to go through the roof. So yeah, we'd get back to the city and use someone else's power.
Smart.
So what kind of impact does this have on the economy? Like, because we've already got inflation, right? Like how does this affect everything else?
There's no good news in this story. So yeah, so
that's what we're about here on CBE. Very much a bad news story. I've got to have a word to you about your Instagram charts too, by the way. So any chance of a good news chart one of these days?
They don't come around that often, I'll be honest.
So the wider impact.
Yeah, so the implications first of all is that retailers are going to go to the wall. So a lot of retailers are struggling to, like, it's crushing their margins, or they haven't bought well, they haven't hedged, so they're not able to survive. And so, yeah, three have gone bankrupt in recent weeks. Electricity in a Box sent out a letter to all of their customers saying that they're going to have a 95% increase in their bills.
Wow. Well, that's because they're shipping it in a box. That's no way to ship electricity. Supply charges are through the roof.
Have you been to Australia Post lately?
Dad, can we turn the heater on? Not until the electricity arrives.
Okay, so yeah, so that's gonna shake up the retail market. Then it feeds through into manufacturing. So Australia's manufacturing sector is a big consumer of electricity. They're going to really struggle. Like I was reading about some textile manufacturers in Melbourne's, the electricity prices have gone up fourfold in the last couple of months. So that's going to really hurt. There's not a lot of businesses. Like if energy is a big factor, big part of your cost mix, that's really going to hurt. And so manufacturing in particular, Aussie manufacturing has been on decline for a while. This could knock it down another peg, which is not a great story.
So is this on top of inflation, or is this part of inflation?
This is inflation that is coming because the regulator sets prices. We haven't seen this bit pass through yet. We knew something was coming, and so this has happened, but it's probably not the full sum of it. Like there's more in the pipeline. Like as I was saying, like it's
low.
yeah, it's up 18% in New South Wales, but that's probably not going to cover the full blowout in the wholesale market. So yeah, there's more coming, and it could sort of keep coming for another couple of years. That's what my mate Tim reckons. It sort of could take 1 to 2 years to fully pass through.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, and so
What can we do about it? Anything? Are we just beholden to? Is this a green energy kind of transition story here? Like, can we?
Oh, it's in the sort of medium term. It does sort of turbocharge the impetus for green energy alternatives. But in the short run, that's you can't really bring that online quick enough to really deal with this. So there's sort of two things you could do. So the UK has the Tories over there under Boris Johnson. They've just introduced a windfall tax. So oil and gas companies are going to be charged 25% tax on their, quote, extraordinary profits. So the extra profits that they've made just because prices have gone up because of the war. And that makes sense. They haven't done anything. They're just profiting because the war's created a spike in their prices. So they're going to tax them. The US, there's a group of Democrats in Congress are pushing for this as well. But yeah, but in the UK, they're going to put this tax and then they're going to cycle that back to households. So every household in October is going to get £400, and then low-income households are going to get another £650. And so that's sort of how they're trying to manage that transition. They're going to tax the extraordinary profits that the energy companies are making and then cycle that back into households through grants. That's one way to do that. Anthony Albanese ruled that out on Friday, saying that's not a thing that they were looking at. I don't know if you remember, but Labor got pretty burnt with their super profits tax, and that sort of killed the Rudd-Gillard government. So they're not really interested in looking at that again.
What, Labor's in government now?
Yeah, but the other thing they could do is they could have a reservation, a domestic energy reservation. So this is that we have a mechanism already in place. The coalition brought this in 2017. It's called for gas anyway. It's called the Australian Domestic Gas Security Mechanism. So the reason why prices in Australia are so high is not because we don't have a super abundance of energy resources. It's that we're paying global prices because we ship most of it off to the world and pay global prices. And so we're paying as much in Australia as China is paying. Like for gas, those prices equalize out. But if we reserved it and said like, okay, we're going to keep some for the domestic market, and then that can keep a lid on prices. And so like for gas, like currently it's $35 per gigajoule on the global market, and that's what you're paying on the East Coast in Sydney. But in Western Australia, West Australia has its own state-based gas reservation, and over there they're paying $9 per gigajoule.
Oh, wow.
Mm. So, yeah, West Australia's laughing right now. And you might see a lot of manufacturers move west because of this, because they might have access to cheap electricity or cheaper
electricity. Not just manufacturers. Look out, we're all moving west at those low prices. All right, why don't we pause here? We'll grab a word from this week's sponsor. After the break, we're going to be talking about ANZ cutting interest rates, as well as an NFT story that just makes it even more ridiculous than it already was. Back in a minute. You're on Comedian versus Economist.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Welcome back. You're on Comedian versus Economist. You can send us an email, cve@equitymates.com, or hit us up on Facebook and Instagram at CVE Podcast. Thomas, ANZ is cutting interest rates. Did I read that right?
Yeah. They came out last week and announced that they're dropping their lowest variable rate back down to 2.29%.
Right.
So they passed on the full rate hike in the beginning of the month up to 0.25%, and now they're dropping it down 1.5%. Back to 2.29. So it's only for new customers, but they're looking. The idea is that. Rate City were saying, Sally Tindall's analyst there, saying it's quite a competitive mortgage market at the moment. There's not so many people applying for mortgages right now as there were sort of 6 months ago or the end of last year. And so the mortgage market is getting competitive and banks are offering juicy rates to get people in. Westpac did the same as well. They dropped their rate. They hiked by 20.25 and then dropped their introductory honeymoon rate down just 2.09%.
Is this a lot of people coming out of their fixed term as well, do you think? So my fixed term ended, I found myself on a bit of a higher rate, so I went shopping around, and a lot of them I noticed are offering cash back as well, so that's another sort of mechanism for attracting new business. So is that part of it too, that the end of the fixed rates that people may have done two or 3 years ago?
There is a big fixed rate reset in the pipeline. It's be starting to happen now. Like, yeah, I did the same, and I'm just come off mine now.
Right.
Yeah, so that's got to be part of it, but yeah.
Is this an interest rate story then, or is this just we're having a sale story?
A little bit. I mean, I think for me it's interesting to remember that the RBA is not the only thing that determines the rates that you can get in the market.
Mm.
I'm looking around at the moment because, my fixed rates have come off, and now I'm looking around what's the best deal that I can get. And there's quite a variety of the market. You know, like there's anything from a flat 2 all the way up to a 4 for sort of like a pretty standard basic mortgage.
Right.
There's a lot of variation in the market. That competitive pressure does influence the rates that you can get. But the other story I think in this is that because like we had the wages data, like we talked about it last week, that came in a lot softer than people were expecting. And so even though the inflation rate came in hotter than expected, wages was particularly soft. And I think that caused economists and the whole market to sort of ratchet back their expectations for rate hikes. And so I think part of this story is the banks going like, oh, okay, we passed the full 25 basis points on. We thought it's off to the races with rate hikes, so we're just going to keep pace with it. But I think they might be to an extent going like, maybe it's not going to be so aggressive from here going forward. It might be a little more chill.
Right. I mean, a honeymoon rate does imply that it finishes like soon.
Yeah. So you go to the marriage rate.
You go to the marriage rate. Where they nag you all the time for repayments. All right, Thomas, you know I love NFTs. You've got an NFT story for us this week, which is I'm quite excited about.
Like, it's one of these stories that's sort of either like really illustrative or just shows that we've reached peak stupid.
Can we just reset and just for anyone that doesn't know what an NFT is, it's a non-fungible token. You've probably heard of them by now. It's an image or it's some sort of digital property that you can prove ownership with through the blockchain. You can buy and sell them. We're not going to go into it any further than that. We did do an episode on NFTs, I think probably a year ago now. So if you want to know more, go back and listen to that one. But Thomas, what is this one about?
Yeah, so there's a guy called Seth Green who is a sort of an actor, probably best known for voicing the character of Chris on Family Guy. So sort of a comedian.
He also did Robot Chicken, I think, if anyone's familiar with Robot Chicken. Robot Chicken. Yeah.
He was pitching a TV show called White Horse Tavern, I think it is. But the idea of the TV show is it blends real-life characters with NFTs, animated NFTs. I think they're all NFTs. I don't know, or it's just animation. A bit like, Space Jam.
Who Framed Roger Rabbit, for anyone who remembers the masterpiece that was Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Yeah, it's set in the bar. So it's a bit of like a cross between Space Jam and Cheers, I think is how they're pitching it. But the lead character was an NFT, a Bored Ape NFT. So Bored Apes are very famous NFTs as the Bored Ape Yacht Club collection.
Yeah.
And there's one of them called Daniel Simeon. I don't know what was particularly special about that NFT, that picture of a monkey.
I'm actually fairly well across this story because I was interested in it, unlike most of your other stories. But I'm loving listening to you explain what went down.
Yeah, great. Yeah. That's a career highlight for me too. This Daniel Simeon NFT, which is apparently worth $200,000 for the picture of Daniel Simeon.
Yeah.
Seth bought it and owned it and animated it and injected it into as the main character in this TV show.
Yeah.
Put together a pitch. There's a preview on Twitter. And then someone stole his NFT. So he no longer has.
He got fished. Seth fell for a phishing campaign. Like, I don't know the details of it, but he fell for a fish, like a phishing email. You get them at work or whatever all the time. Oh. So he fell for the fish and someone stole.
Please send NFTs.
Yeah. Someone stole his NFT. So I don't know if there's a precedent for this. Like having your lead actor on your soon-to-be TV show getting stolen. I think it actually happened during the filming of the latest Top Gun movie. People thought Tom Cruise got stolen, but it turned out he'd just fallen down behind the couch. this guy, I think his name was Darkwing84 was his handle.
No. Darkwing84 bought it from whoever stole it. So now
they could be the same person though.
Could they?
Well, I think so because you don't know who anyone is in the crypto sphere.
Oh, okay, yeah, right. But he bought it from someone with a different handle, right?
Yeah. One handle stole it and then sold it to Darkwing84, which may have been the same person.
Right.
I went and had a look at Darkwing84's collection of NFTs, one of which is a picture of Clive Palmer's face with dicks drawn all over the top of it while he's asleep. I have no idea why that even exists, but this Darkwing84, he's now transferred it to a user called GBE Vault, which sounds like he's put it in a vault. So it sounds to me like Seth's not getting his NFT back. I'm interested in your thoughts on this, Thomas, because Is this kind of where we're heading with the metaverse and the future and digital assets? Like in the future, in the metaverse, this digital thing, it might be your house that you've built in the metaverse that you could lose it through a fish. Like this is kind of concerning, I think, for the future.
No, it's not. No, I don't see that happening. I mean, you think of no, because like what he's stolen? Mm. Like it was the original Bored Ape is just a JPEG, right? Like it's just a picture of an ape. Seth Green, it's effectively concept art for the character, for the animation that was going to go in the TV show.
Yeah,
it's not, you're not actually animating the NFT. So it does, like, I don't know why Seth Green just doesn't go ahead with it. Like, like, yeah, come at me, Darkwing 84. If you reckon you've got IP on this thing, come sue me in court. See how you go with it.
Do you think law enforcement's kept up well enough to track down this kind of situation? Like, because I know that Seth doesn't sound like he rang the police. He just like sent Darkwing 84 a Twitter message and went, look, you really need to give it back or you're going to find yourself in court and I really want to avoid that.
Mm.
So I'm curious why he wouldn't have gone to the police. I'm guessing he went, there's no way that they're up for solving this crime.
Yeah. You do hear about them tracking down stolen Bitcoins and things. So they are onto it.
You file a missing persons report.
Can you describe this ape to me, sir?
But you're right. I could have used, there's a whole collection of these things. And one of, like, you could just grab any of the cheap ones and just say, it's this one just dressed up in the other one's clothes. And because that's what actors do, right?
It's a picture of a monkey. Like, there's not that much unique about it. Like, I think, I don't know what this character, Daniel Simeon, had, like, other than maybe a signature t-shirt that he wears.
Yeah, he wears a Bones t-shirt to distinguish him from the other apes that wore like different t-shirts and had eyeballs hanging out of their faces. Man. Yeah, I don't know. And if it does end up in court, like how does that even play out? Like, can you imagine the prosecutor going into the courtroom just being like, well, you see, Judge, this is just your classic case of an NFT which was stolen during a phishing attack and then traded on a crypto exchange. I think you'll find it's pretty much open and shut. Just imagine the judge being like, right, well, this seems as good a time as any to retire.
And I'm done.
I'll catch you guys later. All right, Thomas, super quick before we finish up for the day, just a bit of listener feedback to get through. Amy sent us a message via Facebook at CVE Podcast. We talked about Terra the other day and the crash of the stable coin that turned out not to be so stable. Amy sent us a link that I thought was worth mentioning. She's linked us to a project called USDT, spelled USDTEA, as in the drink. It's the first stable coin backed by Arizona Iced Tea. It makes no sense to me. But then again, either do NFTs. And neither did Dogecoin, I think, worth pointing out when it was launched. That was launched as a joke. So, yeah.
I think the thing I love about USDT is they've been oversubscribed, so they're no longer selling USDTs. Because,
oh, really?
Yeah, because they capped it at 1,000. Because for every dollar that they received, they had to go out and buy a dollar's worth of iced tea. So if they received, like, if it went viral. I think that the story I like to imagine is it started to go viral and they realized that they had to buy a warehouse to store all the iced tea.
Oh, wow.
To back the stable coin.
But doesn't iced tea have an expiry date on it? You can't. And how do you know it's going to be worth the same as when you, if you buy a dollar's worth of iced tea, that doesn't mean you can sell it for $1.
I'm overthinking this, Adam.
I need to put it more in the context of a friend of mine who made sausage coin just as a thing to do that went nowhere. Didn't get the same viral traction that USDT's got. All right, Clement has sent us a message via Instagram at CVE Podcast. She says she was listening to Bryson Wren the other day on Get Started Investing or in Equity Mates Investing Podcast, not sure which one. And she said they were talking about intentionally selling some positions at a loss for tax purposes. Thomas, she was wondering your thoughts on this and how does this work? Also asked, actually, should I finally get rid of my Zip shares? So noting that you are not a qualified tax accountant in any way, barely an economist. thoughts?
Oh, no, I don't really have any. Like, it'd be nice to be that rich that you've got to create losses to minimize your tax. It's not a situation that I'm in. But I could see how it could work that you lose some money, you drop down a tax bracket, but it really depends on your personal circumstances. Couldn't know. The thing I note about Zip, though, is that NAB has just launched their own buy now, pay later offering.
Right.
So that's coming into the market as well. And we've talked about this a bit in the past, but like for me, buy now, pay later, the whole reason it existed is because it was exploiting a loophole in the credit system. Where it was offering credit without doing thorough credit checks. Banks weren't allowed to do that. There was a niche in the market that buy now, pay later jumped into. But now they've paved the way. Banks are now following suit and joining that market. And I think all of the existing players are going to struggle to hold ground as the market gets saturated and as your big banks come into it. I think there's a lot of pressure on the buy now, pay later companies. And that's gonna hold.
Right. Well, there you go. Definitely not a buy, hold, or sell recommendation in any way. And I would, Clement, I'd talk to a tax agent about the selling positions at a loss if that's your game. Definitely do not take financial advice from any podcast, but this podcast in particular. thank you once again for listening. We really enjoy bringing you the show every week. Don't forget to tell one person if you could, just one. That would really help us out immensely. Of course, lots of other great shows to get your ears around from Equity Mates. Equity Mates Investing Podcast, Get Started Investing, You're in Good Company, Talk Money to Me, which had a really good episode on debt recycling, actually, if you're interested in that as a strategy. Crypto Curious and The Dive, which is excellent as well. Of course, FinFest also happening October 15. Head to equitymates.com/FinFest for all the information. But Thomas, that's it from us for another week. We look forward to joining you again next week. For now, it's bye from us.
Comedian vs. Economist is a product of Equity Mates Media. All information in this podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only. It is not intended as a substitute for professional finance, legal, or tax advice. The hosts of Comedian vs. Economist are not financial professionals and are not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Before making any financial decisions, you should read the product disclosure statement and, if necessary, consult a licensed financial professional. Do not take financial advice from a podcast. For more information, head to the disclaimer page on the Equity Mates website where you can find ASIC resources and find a registered financial professional near you. In the spirit of reconciliation, Equity Mates Media and the hosts of Comedian vs. Economist acknowledge the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea, and community. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.